listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. Delighted to have them as our presenting sponsor.
Absolutely.
And we are talking to you from the surface of the sun today.
Yes.
It is very hot.
It's the hottest day. the hottest day in Los Angeles.
It is the hottest
day. It's about 175
day.
Degrees.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't, and it's weird, Michael, because I don't want to tell too much about myself personally.
Really?
But I don't perspire. which is unfortunate because it means I'm going to explode when I'm 50.
Uh-oh. So that's right around the corner. Isn't it?
But it is hot. I am sweating like Lindsay Lohan on the witness stand here today. It is very warm. Very warm. So, Michael, tell our listeners who we have as our guests.
My goodness, we have in studio with us today, ladies and gentlemen, Blake McIver-Ewing from Junior Star Search and the hit ABC television series Full House, which all of us still watch late at night on Nick at Night.
Yes.
You know that, Blake?
Yes.
Over and over again. And Blake is currently co-starring in the musical Chess for Musical Theater of Los Angeles at the Met Theater in Hollywood.
Which we have heard wonderful things about. Have not gotten a chance in to see it yet, but I definitely will because it's one of my favorite musicals.
Absolutely. And we also have film icon and best-selling author Tab Hunter joining us in just a few minutes.
And Tab, we were very, very excited about that. There's a lot of people in my life who are excited about that. I spoke to, my aunt is a big Tab Hunter fan. I'm actually a Tab Hunter fan because I'm a huge John Waters fan. So I was very, I was very excited to hear that you got Tab Hunter to join us.
Well, you know what? He was very gracious in rearranging his day for us today. He has a routine day on Mondays, and God bless him for doing that. And I thought it would be wonderful to talk about his amazing contribution to films and motion pictures, and in particular in relation to the performing arts, the motion picture version of Damn Yankees, in which he starred.
Yeah. And I want to talk to him about Sophia Loren. That's really what I... But he will be on the phone with us shortly, and we certainly look forward to that. I want to... Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was simply going to say, Breakdown Services, you mentioned that at the beginning of the show, and I wanted to acknowledge them as we always do for people that don't know what Breakdown Services is. It is a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project.
And in addition to Breakdown, we're also honored to have PerformingArtsLive.com as one of our newest ongoing sponsors each week in support of our live arts calendar, which we will read later in the program. It is also available at our website, stateofthearts.la.com. So, Michael, tell me about your week. You had a hellacious week.
I did.
Were moving, weren't you?
Please. Every day. And you know that and you know what? I don't know if you like this, Blake, or not, but in moving, don't we all kind of put this off until the last minute? And that it's hard to wrap your head around that.
Well, because you want to put it off because it's basically the dental theater of cruelty.
That's right. And of course, we did that, and we started the actual process the night before. Before the movers were coming. So
that astounds me, Mike, because you're usually so prepared and you do, you're so, ahead of time and you have all your ducks in a row that you leave everything last minute?
Because I've been too busy.
Oh,
lately.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Okay.
I mean, I was doing my own thing in my own small way, but it was just a little too small, actually, by the time the morning came. And the movers arrived, and I have a question, Paul. Why are they always rushing, the movers?
Well, I don't think they rush all the time. I think some of them are lackadaisical.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You meant Russian.
Yes, I know. In all due respect. But, nobody speaks English. Excuse me. Nobody speaks English. They just kind of look at you they cock their head from left to right.
And that's exactly what we do when they're looking at us.
And it kind of made me feel like I was the Julia Dreyfus character in a Seinfeld episode, having my nails done and
knowing
that they were talking about me. Like, good God, did you ever see a couch that looked like that? Jeez, who'd have that in their home?
How do you say this is the ugliest lamp I've ever seen in Russian?
You must know
that by now.
SKY at the end of every word, So it was a little trying in putting up with them. And of all the things that they could have broken, they broke my plumeria.
Well, did they at least buy you dinner? Or what? What is a plumeria?
Plumeria, Paul, is from Hawaii. You know, with Blake, when you go to Hawaii, and
it's something you get shots for, isn't it?
I went to Hawaii and I got plumeria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, yes. A plumeria is a beautiful plant, and the moment you get off the plane, they put that lei over your neck and that gorgeous.
I thought those were orchids.
No, well, in some cases, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But primarily plumeria.
Primarily
plumeria.
Yeah, say that 10 times.
Next on the WB.
Yeah.
Primarily plumeria.
So big, and these plants are very, they're not indigenous to California. They are in very humid spots, and that's why they grow. So the ones that we grow at the house are done with like children, you know, they're babied and they're taken care of it for all changes of the season.
They're very fragile, yeah.
Yes, and so the movers broke off, I would say, off of the prize plant, which is $1,000-$2,000 plant now.
Oh, man.
Wow.
They broke off two or three major branches, and it's a multi-graph plumeria, so it has all different types of plumeria grafted onto the same tree and growing at the same time. Beautiful. Beautiful to look at, and it was a little, disheartening to see that happen.
I don't mean to make light of it, but can you find plumeria splints? I mean, what do you do when you have a broken plumeria branch?
Well, there is a way to take the broken one, and you have to reroot it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, I'm not the expert.
Okay.
It's the other person in my household that is the expert, and it was just one of those things. I guess it could have been worse, right? but certainly it was disheartening, and I asked for a little discount from the Russians.
Yeah.
And
what's the going rate for plumeria these
$45.
Days? $45.
Yeah, $45, and that was for one less roll of shrink wrap.
Well, see, that's your first mistake, Michael. Even I know you don't shrink wrap plumeria.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. But so that was, what occupied my time. Now, your mom, didn't she have a...
Yeah, well,
she recently moved,
my
didn't
mom,
she?
No, she moved a while ago, but we were just talking about the stress attached to moving. And
which they say, Paul, you told me this a couple weeks ago.
Life change units.
Yes. Yeah. Now,
LCUs are life change units. Actually a physiological measurement of stress in the body. And number one is death of a spouse. Number two is death of a child. And number three is moving, as far as what the stress does to your body.
Wow.
So my mother was moving, and she lived in the same house for about 30 years. And this was a few months before she moved. But she was already in that moving mode. So she was very manic and very, anxiety ridden. And she called me up, Michael, and it was like this was the conversation. You'd never believe that this was an actual conversation that took place. But this is what I get when the phone rings. It's like I hear this. I pick up the phone, and I hear this sort of pounding. And I'm like, hello? And my mother's like, Paul, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm like, Mom, what's wrong? Okay. There's a squirrel in the fireplace. I'm like, okay, why is there a... Well, I wanted to have a fire, and I haven't used the fireplace yet this year, and apparently a squirrel has nested in the chimney. So I thought, by the way, no squirrels were hurt in the telling of this story, I should say. The squirrel does fine. And I'm like, so Mom, you have a fire going now?
Yeah.
And where's the squirrel?
He's in the fireplace.
And there's a fire in the fireplace?
It's a small one. I just started it. Now, the squirrel is standing off to the side, but he's a little freaked out. It's like, well, I would imagine he is. So I hear that. So that's what the pounding is. I'm like, Mom, what's that pounding?
He's hitting the glass. He's trying to get out of there.
I'm
like, Mom, is the squirrel on fire?
No, he's not on fire. Wait, hang on a second. Okay, his tail might be a little singed.
So anyway, here I have to talk my mother through. She's packing. She's got boxes all over. I have to talk her through opening the front door and rigging it and putting the boxes to block the way so that when the squirrel runs out of the fireplace, he is able to escape, which he did. He was perfectly safe. He was perfectly fine. All was well. But why my mother calls me in Los Angeles when she lives in Connecticut, when she's got two children who are, 10 minutes away from her house, that I have to long distance talk her through, squirrel safety. That's the closest thing.
Well,
to story
at least, so, maybe you did the job the others couldn't. I mean, you have a way with words, right, Paul?
I do. But anyway, moving is always stressful, so let's move away from stressful.
Yes.
And let's move into our first guest. I am very, very excited, as I know Michael is, to have this film legend with us, film icon, and also best-selling author. We're going to talk about his biography, but I believe we have him on the line currently. Mr. Hunter, are you there?
Yes, how are you?
How are you? It's a pleasure to have
you
on State of the Arts.
Very well, thank you.
A pleasure to meet you, Tab. This is Michael Sterling.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you for taking time out of your day.
You're having nice warm weather down there, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's too hot. And I know where you are, it's much cooler because you're on the ocean, are you?
Well, actually, we've had a very poor summer, but the last few days have been terrific, and today's a nice warm day.
Well, how long have you lived up there, by the way? I'm not going to identify the city necessarily, but how long have you lived?
Well, I lived up here. I lived in Central California in the 70s, then I moved away, and then I came back about 15 years ago or longer.
Wow. So,
and I don't like large cities. I never have. The only way a city is really nice, maybe 3 days in London or 4 days in New York, if you're on an expense account. Otherwise, go do your thing, go visit the museum, see a couple of plays, so forth, walk a lot, and then rush out to the country where you can breathe some air.
Right. Exactly. Keywords in that was expense account.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
There with
oh,
you.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't happen, I don't think, at any time, particularly in times like these.
No. Can we kind of just reflect, Hab, about your career? Your material that we're reading here is just so amazing that you've done so much in your lifetime. I know that you were a major star for Warner Brothers. I think the number one star, actually, for about 4 years in a row, as I recall, when you were making films for Warners.
Well, you know, the journey was really amazing. I did a lot of independent films, and I tested for a film, about 9 tests, and they finally signed me for that, and then later put me under contract for 7 years. I was there for 5 years and then bought my contract out. And it was really the end of the whole studio system, which will never be again, but it was quite an amazing time.
Tab, I'm looking through the material, too. Michael and I were talking about it before the show, and I really would just love to read the list of leading ladies, because it just reads like a who's who of Hollywood.
there were some pretty good ones, I'll tell you.
Sophia Loren, Natalie Wood, Gwen Verdon, Rita Hayworth, Lana Turner, Debbie Reynolds, Kim Basinger, and Michelle Pfeiffer, and I love the fact that you tucked Divine in there as well. I think that's just great. Truly.
Well, I always say Divine was one of my favorite leading ladies. She was like a big beached whale.
But no, it's very, very impressive. And I was before we had you on the air, I talked briefly about being as much of a John Waters fan as I am, and I certainly don't mean to skip ahead past the earlier accomplishments, but that was a very, very interesting time for you in terms of it was a real resurgence for you, hooking up with John Waters and those films. I mean, that's really what knocked you up to cult status, right?
No question about that. I was just dead in Hollywood. I'd been off to Europe, done films over there, came back, couldn't get arrested in Hollywood, and I became one of the pioneers of dinner theater, traveling all around the country. And while I was in Indianapolis, John called me and asked me about a picture, you know, how would I like to do Polyester? And it just so happened that I had about 2 weeks off before my next engagement, so I said, well, send me the script, and if we can finish it in 2 weeks, you know, the role, I'll let me get back to you after I've read it. And then he said to me, which is my favorite, he said, well, how would you feel about kissing a 200 or 300 pound transvestite? Oh, I didn't know how the hell to answer that. So I said, well, John, I'm sure I've kissed a hell of a lot worse. But he was the most incredible person to work for, I've got to tell you. He looks like your friendly undertaker, and he's just an amazing, amazing human being. And working with Divine was a really exciting experience. It really was. He was just terrific. In fact, because of working with Divine, I later used him in a film that we produced ourselves, a comedy western called Lust in the Dust.
Yes,
with Lady
yeah.
Kazan.
Right, right. Now, when you said the John Waters film took, you know, had to do it within 2 weeks, and knowing what the John Waters films were like early on in his career, did any of them ever take more than 2 weeks to put together? They always had sort of a slapdash, sort of fly-by-night look about them, which was their appeal at that time. Of course, later, when John got more you know, funding and better producers. But how long did it take? Was it did you?
Well, actually, the film I probably worked on it about 2 weeks, and then I did some looping and things a little bit later. But the actual principal photography was done within that time.
Wow.
And he's very, very professional. He knows exactly what he wants, and it was just one of the most delightful film shoots that I've ever been on.
Oh no, and you can tell. I mean, it's just such
he's
a great film.
He's just a prince of a person. There's no question about that.
Well, you know, that's amazing. And another woman that you worked with, now we're switching out of motion pictures for a moment and going on to Broadway, was Tallulah Bankhead in Tennessee Williams' The Milk Train Doesn't Stop Here Anymore.
Well, Tallulah was a piece of work, I will tell you that. I will say it was the second ill-fated version of the Tennessee Williams play, The Milk Train Doesn't Stop Here Anymore, directed by Tony Richardson, this version. And it was great to be a part of that, because I do think a lot of people never understood what a magnificent play that really is that Tennessee wrote. And Tallulah was, to say the least, difficult, but the thread that held us all together throughout the rehearsals and the performances was a brilliant actress by the name of Marion Seldes from New York, who was fantastic.
So working with her, I'm sure you have had tons of stories. I mean, did you get along with her?
Give us some.
I don't think I could tell them across the airwaves. You know?
Well, you know, remember, we're internet radio, so you're not governed by any FCC regulations. But if you don't want to tell it out of the respect for the.
Well, she was not real happy with me. And actually, you know, I felt sorry for her in a way, because here was a woman who has contributed so much to American theater and motion pictures too, but mainly theater, and had done so much. And when you have a God-given talent, I don't think it's good to dissipate it.
Right. Understood.
And I felt bad about that, but I found her certainly one of the most interesting people I've ever worked with.
Surely she must have been, but also don't forget that if she wasn't happy with you, she was the only woman in America that wasn't.
No. And she said something to me one time, too. She said, after I really lost it with her, she said, "Well, you are the rudest person I've met since Marlon Brando." Well, I didn't know what to say. So I said, "Well, thank you for putting me in such good company."
Yeah, the word on the street is that he wasn't exactly a charmer either.
He knew what he wanted to do, and you know, he was very professional. And Tallulah was, but I think a lot was happening out of fear at that point of her career. You know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
It was amazing.
Yeah. You know, and Tab, when people think of you, I think they think very specifically of some of the motion pictures that you did early on in your career, and you know, from Battle Cry and The Pleasure of His Company and those movies. Ride the Wild Surf, I know, is one of them. It's kind of a cult film now, isn't it?
Yeah, that did seem to kind of catch on there. I think one of my favorite films of all time was a loan out from Warner Brothers to Columbia to do a film with Van Heflin called Gunman's Walk.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really a good film, and it was written by Frank Nugent, who wrote The Quiet Man. It was a very good screenplay and a very fine director by the name of Phil Carlson.
Wonderful. And you know, a lot of people don't realize that you have a string of recordings. You knocked Elvis Presley out of the top spot for 12 weeks with your recording of Young Love.
Well, actually, Warner Brothers didn't have a label at the time, and I was on tour with Natalie, and Howard Miller in Chicago put me in touch with Randy Wood at Dot Records. And Randy came up with this tune, and I went in and sang for him, and he said, "When can you record it?" And this was like on a Thursday. We recorded it on Saturday, and by Monday it was already on the car radio. I heard it. And it just shot up. And then Jack Warner said, "Wait a minute, you're under contract to us for everything." And I said, "But you don't have a recording studio or recording
label,
company."
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, "We do now." And they started Warner Brothers Records because of me.
Holy cow.
Yeah,
and that's really, you know, they really at that time they were really trying to dovetail one into the other. I remember hearing a story about Ozzie Nelson, that they would pre-print the 45s of whatever Ricky was going to sing on the show that week. You know, Ricky Nelson would do a song on the show.
Oh, absolutely. And his career did extremely well on record, extremely well.
Yeah, just the two things coming together. Just really is amazing how those two different things came together and just.
Well, the whole business was different then. You know, I mean, the music business, I'm sure, and definitely the motion picture business.
Yeah, which brings us to the difference in the motion picture business that you address in your book. Can you tell us about Tab Hunter Confidential and share any of the stories from that would interest people, but certainly not preclude them from buying the book?
Well, in actuality, it's the story of the journey of a young man who is not really a part of Hollywood, you know, becoming, you know, where does one serve one's apprenticeship? You know, I was really thrilled by all these young actors I knew who were from New York, you know, people like Jimmy Dean and, you know, I mean, a lot of, you know, Monty Clift. I mean, these were people that had a great, you know, experience, you know, but where does one serve one's apprenticeship when you're a product of Hollywood? It's extremely difficult. You have to learn while doing.
Right.
And there comes a time when you say, wait a minute, this is what I really want. And I do owe a great deal to the days of live television, because it was the end of the studio system, and they would loan you out to different places. And live TV, like Playhouse 90s and Studio Ones and Philco and all of those shows, were extremely good for the actor, very good for the writers, you know, and very good. Look at the top directors that came out of there: John Frankenheimer, Arthur Penn, Sidney Lumet.
Right.
I mean, terrific people.
Tab, just for our listeners who might not be familiar with the term, would you do a brief explanation of what you mean by the studio system for those listeners?
Well, there was a studio. Warner Brothers was just Warner Brothers doing Warner Brothers films, and there were people under contract, 7-year contract.
Right.
Either a 7-year contract or a picture deal, like 1, 2, or 3 picture deal. Well, that all sort of ended, what with the television coming in such a big way, and studios weren't making the money, and the audiences were changing. They were all seeing these European films with real people in real situations, and the kind of la-la, kind of carefree type films. They wanted real people in real situations.
Gotcha.
So the whole face of the industry changed, and the studio contracts were no longer there. People would, you know, I bought mine out so I could just work independently.
Oh, it was up
and
to you.
Studios now are—they're big major corporations. It's not the same thing.
Yeah, no.
You know, now it's not the same. If Jack Warner looked at you and said, you know, Mike, next week you star in this picture with so and so, you would say yes, sir, and you do it. That's your job.
Right. It was sort of working at the factory, really.
And it's interesting.
Exactly. And once in a while, if you didn't want to do it, you'd get thrown on suspension.
Right.
Yet with no salary for quite some time.
But, you know, I mean, that's such a what you just described, you know, and I was aware of that, too. I was an actor as a kid, though I wasn't under contract to a studio like you were. But, it's an interesting way to grow up in the business, because you learned a discipline, I'm sure, that a lot of actors today working or trying to be in the business do not learn it.
Well, I love the word you just hit upon, discipline. I think that's a major part of our lives, and it's just sort of gone out the window in every respect. But there's got to be an order to everything. You know, the sun comes up, the sun goes down. We have the seasons. We have the leaves come on the trees, the leaves come off. Everything has an order, and I think there's got to be a certain amount of order to our lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me.
And acting is definitely a discipline.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, you got to go to work.
Trying to live a decent life is a discipline also.
You've got that right.
You know, it's sort of like, you know, Leonard Cohen once said, he's one of my favorite singer-songwriters, and he said, if you're going to do this labor as a writer, he was speaking about writing instead of acting, but I think there's a parallel. He used to say that if you're going to do this profession called a writer, you've got to go to work every day. And
yes.
You know, when you work for yourself, you have to go to work every day. And I think a lot of people who look at acting from the outside and only see the actual performance aspect don't know about the 90% of the time that is non-performing, which is promoting and self-promoting and all the auditions you go to that you don't get, and all the parking and all the gas and all those things. I remember I told someone I had a national commercial running, and I told them what I got over the course of the year for the national spot, and they were like, boy, commercials pay great. And my response was, they have to, because if they didn't, no one else would do it.
You know, my favorite thing is when people always say, gee, I want to be an actor. Yeah. You know, I remember years ago some people would ask me that. The first question I'd always ask them is why? Because I was really, you know, do they want all the recognition and all that right. hoopla? Or what is it they want? You know, or do they really have a genuine desire to express themselves and to, you know, do all of that? You know, it just, you know, it's amazing what you hear.
And now, especially when the, if you ask kids now, they did a study on this recently. You maybe 20 or 30 years ago, they might have said, I'd want to be an actor. And now they're saying, I want to be famous. You know, it's not being a performer. It's just being famous for anything as the dreck of
reality.
Well,
I think that whole thing of celebrity is just awful. I mean, people ought to learn a little, you know, keep informed about what's happening in the world and, you know, things like that, and read and get, you know, what you learn, no one can ever take away from you. So, you know, my mother was a very strict old German, but she was fabulous, and she said, improve your mind, what you learn, no one can ever take away from you. And, you know, I think it's really important, a lot of those old cliches that were thrown out to us when we were growing up.
Well, they're cliches, you know,
I think, but a discipline, I think, plays one of the most important parts of the whole thing.
Well, now, let me ask you that. Discipline, I think you had been groomed, you know, through your career, obviously, for that, and you proved that and stepped up to the plate on many occasions. And one in particular is when you did, I think, for you, what you did an amazing job in, was Damn Yankees. Excuse me. And I know that you were the only person in that film, correct me if I'm wrong, that was not from the cast of the Broadway version of the show.
Well, that's true. Jack Warner bought Pajama Game for Doris Day, and he bought Damn Yankees for me. Well, George Abbott, who produced it on Broadway, did not want me for Damn Yankees. He thought I was a little light in my loafers. You know, he just didn't really care for me at all, and he was not one of my favorites either. But I'll tell you something, I loved the cast. I loved the show. It was a great opportunity, and Stanley Donen was the eye for George Abbott while we were doing the filming of that film. He was actually there as the director on the set with George there to see that George didn't make any mistakes. Stanley Donen was terrific, and the New York cast was brilliant. I was thrilled to be a part of that one.
Well, it's something, you know.
But of course, live TV was really my favorite. I mean, that was the most frightening, but also the most gratifying of all the things to do in the old days.
Isn't it amazing that the most frightening is usually the most rewarding after the fact?
Oh, God, scared the hell out of me.
Now, Tab, do you still sing? I mean, is that something you enjoy?
No way.
No way.
In church on Sunday, I try, but I sound like a bullfrog.
Oh, I was going to invite you to headline my nightclub down here in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, don't hold your breath.
Tab, we only have a couple of more minutes, but we do want to get the title of the book out there because it looks fascinating. I personally have not read it yet, but I plan to. It's Tab Hunter Confidential, The Making of a Movie Star. Like I said, we only have a couple of minutes left, but is there any particular anecdote or one of the stories that's in the book that you could share that...
Well, the reason I wrote the book is because a friend of mine said, I think you should do a book. And I said, who'd want to read a book about me? And he said, well, you'd be surprised. And I thought, you know, people are always writing about people after they're dead and gone. And I thought, wait a minute, get it from the horse's mouth and not from some horse's ass after I'm dead and gone. And that's exactly why I wrote the book. And, you know, I'm not going to gloss anything over that. It was the journey. That was the trip.
Right.
And I thank God every day now that I just was that fortunate to have been a part of all that.
But did you have any idea, though, once you finished the book that it was going to turn out to be such a phenomenal bestseller?
No, that shocked the heck out of me. But I worked with a wonderful man on it. I had 500 pages in my computer, and Eddie Muller is a brilliant writer, and we worked really well. And he and his wife live in the Bay Area, so it was very easy to communicate with him all the time. And I was very pleased we were able to put together like that, and even more pleased when it got the reception that it did.
Well, you know, I want to thank you for one thing in particular. You've always done everything that you've done in your career with a great deal of class. And that's
very nice of you. Thank you.
Well, that's something that we don't find very often again today in today's younger Hollywood, that the class is just kind of out the window. And when you do come across it, whether it's someone like you or you find somebody, or, you know, actually of the many stars that we have had on our show since we premiered back in May, Carol Channing, Carol Lawrence, Sally Struthers, a lot of people like that. Those are the classy people. You know, they are the ones that have, like yourself, they have been going through that discipline ever since they were young people. My goodness, you started at 19, And
well, you know, when you work with people like Gary Cooper and Fred Astaire, you work with people that have Van Heflin and Lana Turner, Rhea Hayworth. I mean, these are people that have style
right.
and class, and they're just. I just think that's a thing that's kind of going out the window nowadays, and I think style is very important. I think class is very important. I think discipline is very important. You know, people, I'm sick and tired of, well, I have to be me. I mean, there's, you know, yeah, okay, fine, but it isn't all just about you.
Well, and
you
also,
know,
yeah.
I think you have to think about those things.
And, you know, it's fine to talk about I have to be me, but also, you know, the Michael, I think the word, you probably just used it, but the word is elegant. There's
yes.
just an elegance to these people that is hard to find now, and it's because they're being saturated with stuff on the internet and the reality TV. I mean, at the time that Tab Hunter was making his name known, you know, you had to be a certain level of elegance and class to rise to the top. There weren't 5,000 channels where you'd always find a niche to, you know, fit in or present yourself for your 15 minutes. And the elegance.
Well, I was very frightened to start, you know, because I was just thrown in with a brand new name, you know, Tab Hunter. You know, they said we got to tab you something, and I used to show horses, hunters, and jumpers. You know, it could have been Tab Jumper as opposed to Tab Hunter. You know, and I just think, well, you know, you've got to work at it. You know,
right.
Things just don't happen. You've got to work at it.
Right.
Well, you certainly have done that. And again, we thank you so much for joining us here on State of the Arts. And ladies and gentlemen, for more about Tab Hunter and to be able to buy that book, you can go directly to tabhunter.com. And do just that and take a look at the wonderful career of this fine actor and this wonderful personality and this great star. So have a beautiful day up there where you are on the coast of California. And
well, thank you very, very much.
Thank
and
you.
And also
much,
Amazon has it. Now they've just put it out on Kindle or one of those little, you know, one of those little other things. So I'm really excited about that.
Oh,
where
great.
Where the book went. Yeah.
Congratulations.
And I do appreciate you letting me, you know, have this interview with you.
No, it's our pleasure.
Goodness, our pleasure all the way.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Tab Hunter,
thanks a lot.
Thank
take
you.
Good care.
You too. Take care.
Thank
bye.
You.
Boy, that was great. I really enjoyed that. It was nice talking
thank
to you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Michael, do you want to kick off our Performing Arts Live calendar?
Yes, indeed, Paul. Let me just get
and
to that
And we'll get
page.
To Blake shortly thereafter.
There you go. So let me tell you, Paul, now through September 4th at the Mount Hollywood Theater in Los Feliz, California, just east of Hollywood, it's your chance to catch Redhead Cuban Housefrau Husband. The first new two-act musical about the making of television's first great sitcom from acclaimed playwriter Fletcher Roden. This 90-minute backstage musical charts the foursome's friendships and conflicts through the run of the popular television show, highlighting the rocky marriage of the show's leads, in particular the Redhead's struggle to keep the union and the show together.
Love, Loss, and What I Wore, now through August 29th in the Audrey Skirball Kenneth Center at the Geffen Playhouse in Westwood, California, is an intimate collection of stories by Nora Ephron and Delia Ephron based on the best-selling book by Eileen Beckerman, as well as on the recollection of Ephron's friends. The play uses clothing and accessories and the memories they trigger to tell funny and often poignant stories that all women can relate to. Florence Henderson, Meredith Baxter Burney, and Marissa Jarrett Winokur are among the all-star of five in this week's final set of performances.
And, Paul, you'll be dancing in the aisles when con man Jonas Nightingale brings his gospel-charged tent revival to rain-starved Kansas. Four-time Tony Award nominee Raul Esparza and Golden Globe Award nominee Brooke Shields will star in the world premiere Broadway-bound new musical based on the movie with Steve Martin, Leap of Faith, boasts a brand new score from eight-time Oscar winner Alan Menken and is directed and choreographed by Tony Award winner Rob Ashford.
Musical Theater of Los Angeles presents the concert version of Tim Rice's spectacular Broadway musical Chess on stage now through August 29th, featuring the award-winning cast and crew of Cabaret, Ragtime, Chicago, and musical theater stars and Broadway veterans Emily Dykes, Gregory North, Blake MacIver-Hewing, Peter Welkin, and newcomer, is it Nikki Glasspell? Okay, great.
Rock and Roll's incomparable Grammy Award-winning Huey Lewis and the News, who just completed recording their ninth album titled Soulsville, which will be released November 2nd, Struts their stuff on stage this Friday, August 27th, at the show at Agua Caliente Casino in Rancho Mirage, California, just adjacent to Palm Springs.
Drunk Talk is an original play that transforms an actual bar into an interactive, high-spirited comedy. So enter the world of McSwiggin's Tavern, where you're not just an audience member, but a patron. Follow the cast of zany characters as they try and cope with the looming reality that their local bar is closing down. Arrive thirsty at the Dragonfly Bar in Hollywood, California, now through Sunday, August 29th.
For further information, ladies and gentlemen, about any productions and or events mentioned on today's State of the Arts Live calendar brought to you by the PerformingArtsLive.com, visit us during the week ahead at stateoftheartsla.com.
That's stateoftheartsla.com. And also, if you want to contact us about anything in particular, send us an email at stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. stateoftheartsla@gmail.com.
You know why I laugh? I don't know why.
Why do you laugh?
When you said that, I was looking at you and thinking, my goodness, that was a website, the email address. And when you said gmail.com?
Yeah.
I thought gstring.com. Why isn't there a gstring.com?
Oh, trust me, there is.
Oh, there is?
Yes. Trust me, if it's on the internet, and as you know, a lot of the internet is the world's largest bathroom wall, so I'm sure there's a gstring.com.
All with the exception of us.
Mm-hmm.
We are so happy to have in the studio with us, Paul, a young man who a lot of us see nightly.
Now, you don't have to get into your personal life here, Michael.
Well,
let's stick to the radio show.
Not Nick at Night. Thank God for Nick at Night, because they bring back so many wonderful shows.
They do.
And Full House is one of them.
Yeah.
And that is where I actually remember our next guest, Blake McIver Ewing, from his performances on that series, on Full House, and also from the fact that he won the 1992 Junior Vocalist Championship on Star Search.
Yeah, yeah, and the other TV credits are extensive. I had no idea, Blake. The Little Rascals, a Full House, Star Search, the appearances on Drew Carey, Clueless, Home Improvement, The Nanny, and the voiceover work, too. Tell me, do you mind if we kick off about that?
Because I'm fascinated. Please, absolutely.
Do you enjoy the voiceover as much as you do the live performance?
I do, absolutely. And in some ways, a lot more.
Because you don't have to shower or anything?
You can go to your pajamas to work. Yeah. Yeah, no, character voices are fun. You know.
Oh, that's great. So what do we have? We have Tarzan, Little Mermaid 2, Anastasia, Recess, Hey Arnold. What's Hey Arnold?
Hey Arnold was a show on Nickelodeon.
Oh, yes, a few years
back.
Okay, yes.
No, very cool show.
Yes.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool show. Took place in New York.
So now, is there a preference that you have? I mean, you obviously, he's a wonderful singer, ladies and gentlemen. That he is. He's currently, by the way, co-starring in the Los Angeles Musical Theater production of Chess at the Met Theater in Hollywood. And he will be making his cabaret concert debut at a lovely nightclub here in town.
What's it called, Michael?
It happens to be called Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's.
Now, that's got to be.
In Studio City.
That's a coincidence.
Is it?
Your name is Michael Sterling. So what are the odds?
Well, there you go. I'll tell you, the odds were 2 years for me, because I've been trying to get him booked into the nightclub for 2 years. And finally, it just all came together. It happened to be the right time in his life and the right time in our booking process. And Blake is making his debut on September 5th over that holiday. And we are so excited to have him in. And Joe Giamalva, a mutual friend, is directing the show. And James Lent, a mutual friend, is his musical director. So it's all a good thing.
James Lent has performed there before, if I remember.
Yes, during the time that you were there.
Yes.
For LA's Next Race Stage Star.
Yes. Thought I recognized the name.
Yes. So let's talk about that for a minute. The process. This is something new for you.
Absolutely.
So you're in Chess, and that's a book musical, basically.
Yes.
And you've got the coverage of a supporting cast and a big orchestra behind you.
Beautiful
in this production.
Beautiful orchestra, yes. We're very excited about our orchestra.
I bet you are.
It doesn't happen a lot in 99 Seat Theater that we've got such a large orchestra.
Well, all of my colleagues who have been out to see you, and I again apologize for not seeing your performance on Saturday due to my hellish move, but I will get there.
It was the Plumeria's
fault. It was the Plumeria. I couldn't come see your show. I have Plumeria.
There you go. But every one of them has said what an outstanding job you have done, and the show as a whole piece of work was terrific, and the orchestra wonderful, and Peter Welkin, and all of these very talented people that you're working with And Emily Dykes. Let's talk about Emily Dykes, because, and you know, the name is intriguing to me, Paul. But I actually went on to the internet this morning just to clarify everything I was thinking. Like, who would name their kid that? Right? I don't know. Would I mean, if you're Dick Van Dyke's daughter, then I could see that. But she's not. But you know what?
And as you know, Dick Van Dyke is not his original name. He changed it.
To?
No, originally it was Penis Van Lesbian.
Oh, so it's changed. Bada bing.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. Thank
all
you.
All right. No, but she actually, I don't mean to be disrespectful. I did go on the her site, and she's beautiful.
Yes, she plays
beautiful
Svetlana.
Blonde.
Yes.
Plays Svetlana.
Yes,
and
she comes in the second act and
gorgeous,
really shakes things up quite a bit.
Yeah, gorgeous voice. By everything that I was hearing on the vocals when I was listening this morning, it sounded great, huh?
We're having a blast. It's really a treat to do this score every night.
But being in musical theater, Blake, for you, is you're no stranger to this. I mean, you last year were, if I think it was last year, you were co-starring in Light in the Piazza,
yes,
a production
correct.
That you also produced.
Yes.
And did a fantastic job in that and got
you.
Wonderful reviews. But now you're going to be doing your own concert act. How does that feel? How does that compare?
Yeah, scary is how it compares. No, when we spoke a few years ago, I couldn't imagine what I would have to talk about. I thought how ridiculous that I'm 25 and thinking about doing a retrospective show. But I guess the fact that I started at 6, I have a few things.
Yeah, well, exactly,
to say.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the title of your show is pretty much along those lines.
Yes, it's Musical Confessions of a Child Co-Star.
There you
go. Not a child star.
It's a great title.
It is a great title, isn't it?
Pay no attention while I write that down. Now, but in selecting the songs for it, did you have assistance with that? Did you know immediately what you wanted to do?
I started with way too many. I had about 50 songs, and we narrowed it down to about the 11 or 12 that
okay.
you're going to hear. I'm using each musical genre that I love as a conduit to tell a story about
okay.
a show or an event in my career. So.
Now, was musical theater, as you said, you started when you were 6,
mm-hmm.
and now you're doing a lot of musical theater. Was it part of your career very early on? Is it something you got interested in later?
It was not. It was something I got into when I was 12 and a friend...
Oh, so when you were a veteran already.
I was 12 years old, yes. I was so aged. And a friend had seen Ragtime in Toronto and knew that they were mounting the U.S. premiere in Los Angeles and said that I had to go in for this part. It was just the perfect role for me, and that was really my foray into that's, musical theater.
That's another phenomenal show, Ragtime. You had to just really, I mean, that had to be a true joy to be part of.
It was my whole education in
really?
Musical theater. It really was, yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's interesting when you're young, such as you are.
And me.
And
young too,
and
you
were all young, Paul.
Yes,
aren't we?
I am young.
I'm going to be another year younger, actually, in a couple of weeks. And you just were. You just turned another year younger.
Yes, I did.
Didn't
I
you?
I did. Well,
yes.
I have that painting in the attic.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
No, but I was going to say, I, too, when I was a kid and I was learning, I learned the craft of musical theater by simply being in musical theater. And not. I didn't have any background. You had something that was quite natural that came to you, which was your beautiful voice. And while I sang well, I certainly didn't sing like you. But I certainly learned about theater and how to be an actor, and as we were talking earlier about discipline, and boy, theater is really where you learn the discipline.
And it's deceiving, too, because everyone thinks, oh, it's musical theater, it's lighthearted, you don't need real good, you know, theatrical, you know, acting chops to pull it off. It's incredibly difficult.
It really
is. It's more physically taxing, it just, you know, it's nonstop. And you have to, I mean, I did a one-man show for years, and I really view a cabaret performance as the musical equivalent of a one-person show.
Right.
I mean, that's really
absolutely.
The definition of. And there's no, I mean, if you're feeling down or you had a bad day or whatever, all of that has to go away, and that's exhausting. When you have to do that long term, you know, you just you got to deliver. You know, you just have to
right.
deliver, and it's just I think a lot of people aren't aware that you know if you know when you don't work performing and being viewed by audiences, you have a crappy day and you're in the office, you just are a bad person
right.
that day. We don't have that luxury.
We don't have the luxury to be grouchy.
Yeah.
No,
right.
no.
But
we
now,
have to tell our story no matter
as
what.
As much discipline
right.
that comes with musical theater or theater in general. There has to be also a different kind of discipline that is in television, especially because it works so very fast,
absolutely.
Right? Absolutely. Now, you were so young, and working with two young girls who were the Olsen twins on that show.
I think they're still the Olsen twins.
They are the Olsen. Still are the Olsen twins, but they're and not much taller than that either. But
I'm not either. So.
But how was that? What was it like to work with them? I mean, here clearly, you had a huge talent on that show. When you sang, and you stood apart miles from anybody else.
Well, thank you.
Including the Olsen twins.
We had a great time. It was a wonderful cast, and it was a wonderful crew. We really had a family there, and when I guest starred on some other sitcoms, I realized what a rarity we had in that our producing staff and our cast, we were such a unit, and it was really wonderful. It was kind of like school. It was kind of like going to school, and everybody had their place, and everybody had their thing, and it was beautiful. It was a great place to learn. It was a great place to create. It was a very safe space for me to grow up.
And you learned for about 3 years?
3 years I was on the show. Wow.
And musically, you must have been somewhat enamored by John Stamos.
Absolutely.
Because of his ability and as a musical artist and person that he is.
Yes. Yes. And thanks to the device of the club in the show that he owned, we got to perform a lot, and that was fantastic. So much fun.
And Lori Loughlin, we've always liked Lori. She's kind of stayed and found her place, her niche here in television.
Absolutely.
Just kind of keeps going on and on from one series to another.
And gets more beautiful by the day.
Indeed. And speaking of beautiful, he comes from some beautiful lineage. His mother was one of the original gold diggers, Paul.
You told
Dean
me that.
Martin's
you
gold
told me
diggers.
That. And she I was. Am the my friend, Dino Glorioso, my friend Dean, who lives in Los Angeles now, but he's actually moving. His name is Dean Glorioso, and he's named Dean for Dean Martin.
Ah.
He's a Dean Martin fan, so when he finds out that I've actually met the offspring of a gold digger,
Susan is his mother's name.
Yes.
And you said she's lovely.
She's beautiful.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes. Well, I guess, you don't really, if you're a gold digger, you're going to be.
You got to be. That's a prerequisite, I think.
Yeah.
How long was she?
They didn't look like Ruth Buzzy, those gold diggers.
How long was she a gold digger?
She was with the group for 5 years. Yeah.
That's a long time because they collected those ladies from the most strange and unusual places around the country, and they would see them in an office building. No, seriously.
Oh, okay. You made it sound like they breed them like
mix. Oh, no.
They just collected them.
They didn't necessarily. I mean, they all had some sort of talent, but they were. I think it was pretty
nationwide
much predicated
casting
on,
calls,
on
yes.
their
nationwide casting?
On their physicality and their certain look that they had to be a gold digger.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And they're still performing today.
Really?
His mother is still performing today.
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Absolutely.
Where is she performing?
All over the place.
They
played Vegas last year. They're on their way to Florida.
They were at the El Portal Theater here in North Hollywood.
We were just. Was that the one we were talking about?
Perhaps it was. Yeah.
I don't remember because we were talking about something about the El Portal.
Yeah.
But I would love to see that. I think that's just a kick. Just great.
Well, I can do something about that.
Yeah. Let us know.
Please do.
Speaking of chess, as we were at the beginning of the show, we just want to remind people that they still have time to see that and see Blake in chess, along with a great cast of Broadway and musical theater veterans, and that is at the Met Theater in Hollywood. And if you go to plays411.com and insert in the keyword search chess, that'll take you right to the ticket opportunity to buy tickets to go see this amazing show with this amazing young man.
And also, Michael, when it's the Sterling's upstairs at Vitello's performance following this will be Sunday, September 5th. Is that correct?
Sunday, September 5th.
And for those of you who haven't been to Sterling's upstairs, for those people who are listening, Michael can't really tell you this because it would sound indulgent on his part, but I can tell you because I've been there as a patron as a visitor for about half a dozen shows. And Blake, I'm sure you've seen the club and the inside.
Beautiful.
And what Michael has created there with the look and the feel of the New York Supper Club with the booths and the whole vibe of the room. Michael, you told me they just installed a brand new sound system.
Huge.
And now the full theatrical lighting in there, and it's a great place to go and spend an evening and just have a great time. The Vitello's food is as wonderful as ever, and I've always had a great time. About half a dozen performances I've seen there, and I performed there
for a month you were there.
It was great. I really truly enjoyed it, and it was a great time.
Well, that's going to be a wonderful thing for us to add to our roster, of which is now almost 300 acts since we opened in June 2006.
Over 300 acts.
Yes, just over the line.
Wow.
Yeah. Can
wow.
you believe that?
Boy, and all of this, and you're just getting younger.
There you go.
How do you pull it off?
It's all lighting, and good lighting, actually. I take it with me everywhere I go. Little initiation that we do with all of our guests, Blake. We ask them to tell us their most dreaded story.
Most embarrassing story.
Most embarrassing
on stage
story. Or on stage.
You got 2 minutes.
Okay.
Do you have a juicy one for us?
I actually do have a very, very juicy
he's
one.
He's all red, too. It must be good. Go ahead.
It was very early into the run in Ragtime, and the very first moment in the show was I came through a psych and opened a door and walked out on stage, and I was completely alone on stage for about 30 seconds. And I went to open the door, and I just, you know, you feel something's wrong, and I heard the Velcro from the psych rip, and the door actually came off from the psych, and the doorknob fell out. Half it was in my hand, the other half rolled all the way down the stage. We worked on an extreme raked stage, so the doorknob rolled right into the orchestra pit. And I was completely stunned, did not know what to do, and actually the door fell from the rafters as the psych was flying out and actually injured some people pretty bad. So we were able to laugh about it many, many months later when everyone was well and healed.
The door didn't get dropped
did not, and it caught on one of our big metal, Eugene Lee's gorgeous metal set of Pennsylvania Station.
Not to mention those people who were hurt now collect royalties from Ragtime.
Well, you know, and that's the way to stay employed in the theater.
Exactly.
Anyway, we do have to wrap it up because we're at our we've completed our show. But our guest for next week, we have a surprise celebrity guest next week, which we will reveal next week. And we also have actor and artistic director Timothy Dang from the prestigious East West Players in downtown Los Angeles, David Henry Wang Theater. It has been a pleasure having you here, Blake. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you, Blake.
State of the Arts. And
thank you, Tab Hunter.
And thank you, Michael. And we will see you all next week.
Thank you, Paul.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.